Welcome to the America's Credit Unions podcast. I'm Associate Editor Brock Fritz. Every organization has future leaders within their walls. How do credit unions go about developing them? How do you identify the next generation of leaders, and what path do they take from there? I'm joined by Brian Fassett, Director of Learning and Development at Advantis Credit Union in Portland, Oregon, and John Sexton, Senior Vice President of Culture and Leadership Development at Vibrant Credit Union in Moline, Illinois. We have two separate conversations on leadership development. We'll go over their philosophies, the training methods their credit unions employ, and how recent workplace changes like the hybrid workforce have impacted leadership development. There's a lot to cover, so let's get right into it. First, welcome on Advantis Credit Union Director of Learning and Development, Brian Fassett. Tell us a little more about Advantis, just so we can kind of get an idea of how many employees, who you're working with, kind of the workplace setup.
Yeah, Advantis is proud to say that we're the third chartered credit union in the state of Oregon. We started out informally as the Down and Out Club, and we were meeting the needs of the local electric company employees beginning way back in 1921. We were formally chartered on September 5th, 1928 in Oregon as Portland Electric Power Company Employees Credit Union. And we have had a long and successful organizational tenure since then. A number of mergers. We merged with Portland Area Community Employees Credit Union back in 2005 and became Advantis. And now this year, we're actually looking forward to a merger by the end of this year with Rivermark Credit Union. We're currently about $2 billion in assets and have about 300 employees. And we have about 90,000 members in the Portland metro area. But we serve the 24 western counties in Oregon and the entire state of Washington. Okay.
Well, so I assume mergers kind of a big thing for your type of role, too, just kind of getting everyone acclimated.
Yes, it is. You know, I haven't ever been through a merger before, so this will be a big learning curve for me. That we've got a lot of folks on our team at both of the organizations who've been through mergers. So this year is really dedicated to being as thoughtful and deliberate and proactive about a successful merger as we can be. And one of the things that we did in approaching this merger, our executive leadership team and our boards of directors said, look, we don't want to lose anybody. We've been very deliberate about our hiring and training processes at both organizations. And so we're committed to ensuring that there's a place for all of our employees, which will be close to 600 people post-merger.
We're going to talk a lot about leadership development today. Might be a pretty general question for someone in your role, but why is that important to you? Why is developing leaders something credit unions should care about?
Yeah, I mean, I think credit unions' philosophy of people helping people really creates a great environment for every new employee. It's a low entry barrier, right? We hire people from food service. We hire people from lots of different industries and we bring them in. And then we make up maybe for that lack of formal education or formal career experience through learning and development opportunities. And one of the key ways that we do that is focusing on leadership development. Here at Advantis, the last number of years, we have been partnering with the Go West Credit Union Association, an organization called DDJ Myers, because they offer an incredible program. It used to be called the Emerging Leaders Program. It's now called the Advanced Leadership Program. But we only had the opportunity to send maybe three or four people a year through that program. And so our leadership team said, look, now's the time for us to really invest internally in creating a program that's accessible to all of our leaders. And it's also a program that we want it to be unique and specific to our organizational culture. And so we took a really thoughtful and deliberate approach to this. We surveyed our leadership team and said, of the 40-ish common competencies that lots of leadership programs are structured around, which are the ones that are the most important to our team and our organization at this time? Our leadership team really easily settled on about 10 or 12 competencies. And so we decided for ease of structure that we would focus on those top 10 competencies. And once we had the competencies, then we started building out learning objectives around that. We started building out a program structure. And so we've spent about the last 14 months creating all of the content that supports those 10 leadership competencies.
Wow. So you're sort of right in the mix of it or coming out of it. I'm not going to ask you to memorize them all off the top of your head, but what are some of those competencies?
You know, we kind of broke the competencies up into more foundational skills and then higher level skills. And so some of those more foundational skills include communication. It includes listening and collaboration. Some of the mid-level skills include change management, integrity and trust. And then those higher level skills include motivating and emotional intelligence.
How do you identify who starts in the program?
Yeah, so that was partly based on guidance from our leadership team. And for a number of years now, we've had a really strong, what we call professional development grant program. And this is a first-come, first-served program that allows anybody in the organization to raise their hand and say, I want to learn more about management or leadership or IT or compliance or whatever. And so with that program in place, with really robust e-learning resources like LinkedIn Learning and CPD Online, we decided that this program was going to focus on employees in the organization who are already managers. So the prerequisite was that they had to already be in a management position. And so we're looking at basically everybody who is a supervisor all the way up to our executive leadership team. And really what we found, we have an incredibly talented executive leadership team who their benefit is going to be giving us some guidance and direction for this program. We decided not to include them in the scope of the program because at that level, they get more out of professional organizations, going to things like the GAC conference or executive coaching. And so it's really basically, you know, up to our VP level, all the way down to our supervisor level.
I guess, what's it look like? They start the program. How does it progress forward?
Yeah, so we decided to do this program as a cohort model. And so that means that we're going to have smaller groups that get to know each other better, that really dig into these topics and work on them over a number of months. And so we built out specific cohorts that are based on a lot of different factors. It includes education. It includes tenure at the organization. It includes their behavior style. And this is like DISC, but this is a way for us to really relate to each other and communicate more effectively. Everybody who goes into the program has two prerequisites that they have to have already completed. And that is a 9-month integrity coaching program that we deliver to all of our supervisors. And this is a program that focuses on developmental coaching. Then the other thing that we introduced just last year is we wanted to make sure everybody who is going into this program had also participated in crucial conversations. And what we were finding is that there were, at times, opportunities for us as an organization to hold more challenging conversations, right? We're in the credit union industry. We're very polite. And we didn't always have those conversations that were both 100% candid and 100% respectful. So crucial conversations and integrity coaching are the two prerequisite programs before staff are able to go into this leadership development program. We named the leadership development program Cultivate Excellence, and that was a name that we came up internally. And the program is actually 18 months long. So we start with a 2-day kickoff, including outside speakers and a lot of content where we're looking at the wellness wheel. So we really look holistically at what kind of skills can we build. We're looking at aggregate marginal gains. We're looking at atomic habits. We're looking at a number of skills that even if somebody's really proficient in this area, they're still going to get something out of it. And once we jump into that kickoff, they're going to spend a month looking at behavior style assessments. So this is built off of the DISC model, but we use the program specifically from Integrity Solutions. And it gives them a lot more insight, both about themselves. How are they under stress? How are they in their natural state? What does that mean when they're managing, when they're leading people, so that they can build an action plan specifically for themselves to focus on building their unique strengths? From there, we jump into 10 months of those competencies. During the competencies, they're going to be doing a half-day workshop on each one of the competencies. They're also going to be doing, we have a new AI platform where they're going to have to do a recording of themselves about what they learned about the competency and what they're going to incorporate into their management and leadership practice going forward. After the 10 competencies, then they're going to dive into what we consider business acumen. And an important part of this program, based on the feedback that we got from our leadership leadership team, was that we wanted all of our leaders to have a deeper understanding about all of the aspects of our organization and the business, right? So those business acumen sections are going to include presentations from our accounting and finance department, our IT department, our contact center, our branches, so that each person, regardless of what part of the business they're in now, they're going to really round out the information that they have about all of the other elements of the business. So they're going to have about 4 months or 5 months of those focused business acumen sessions. And then we'll finish off with a formal kind of graduation and celebration at the end, marking their achievement after starting the program 18 months earlier.
And are you're in the midst of the first cohort, or?
We have not yet started. We were ready to start the first cohort, and then our merger was announced. And so we're just polishing the rest of our content so that it's all ready to go as soon as, our goal is that we'll launch as soon as the merger is finalized.
And then is it online mixture?
It's a combination. Yeah. So we heard feedback from our leaders that they like the convenience of doing some stuff online because then they can do it based on their schedule. And so one of the components of this is an online platform. That's where they do the AI supported recordings about what they learned. That's where they go for their pre-work and individual learning that includes articles, videos, and podcasts about each one of those 10 competencies. And then we come together in person for that kickoff session, for the monthly session, and then for that ending graduation. And what we found is that online sessions work great because it saves time, saves reimbursement for gas, that kind of thing. But you lose the ability to connect and really deeply network with your peers. And that's something that we weren't willing to compromise in this schedule now.
I'm just kind of curious, now that we're 4 years out from COVID, has there been any trends as far as like people who become leaders being in the office more, or where do you think those like in-person conversations kind of fit in?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. As I teach our integrity coaching program, I definitely talk to our leaders about some of the value and benefit of having those developmental coaching conversations in person. My team specifically, we're a team of 5 people, and there was a really expressed interest to spend time together in person every week. And so when we're in the office every Tuesday, we have a morning huddle where we talk about each one of our individual projects and what we're working on. We have an afternoon department meeting because the team said, hey, we want time together. And yeah. So, you know, it depends on the department. It depends on the function, but we definitely do see, you know, a good number of managers and leaders who spend more time in the office, even though they have the opportunity to work remote more.
So obviously that has changed since your career started a bit, I'm sure. I guess if you want to say more about how that's changed, but then also if anything else has kind of changed in the L&D space since you've been involved.
Yeah, so many things have changed, right? The prevalence of e-learning is one of the big ones and how dynamic that can be. And all of the data that really shows that e-learning is just as or even more effective than in-person training, right? When I started in credit union world back in 2010, I was at a lot smaller organization, but e-learning was reserved only for those annual compliance courses like BSA and the regs, Reg E and Reg D and some of those, right? And what we've found when you overlay learning science and all of the technology is that e-learning does a great job of really leveraging the opportunity that people have to go back to that content multiple times, which you can't do with a live session, or not easily. It also gives learners a lot more choice. So, you know, right now we're mid-March and lots of people are thinking about IRAs. Tax season is upon us. But if we hire somebody in July, they're not going to be thinking about IRAs until the end of the year. So e-learning gives us some flexibility where right now folks would kind of front load their understanding about IRAs. If they hire later in the year, they may push it until closer to the end of the year when they get more requests from members. And so we love that flexibility.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because yeah, you're never going to memorize everything either. So a little mixture, is that kind of what you're finding is the best option?
It is a mixture, yeah. And one of the things that has been really important is having a really solid policy and procedure platform that's documented, that's online, that's accessible to everybody, where we also have a high level of confidence that all the content in there is accurate.
I know you haven't had a cohort yet. Is there a process for feedback, or how does that work with the people that go through the program?
Yeah, so for our leadership development program, that was another really important part of this, that we wanted dynamic feedback. And so we actually created a custom assessment that each person is going to go through at the beginning of the program, and it's looking at their skill level around those 10 competencies. And it's really a 360 review. So they're going to be assessing themselves. They're going to be reaching out to their manager. They're going to reach out to some direct reports and some peers and have all of those folks assess their level in those 10 areas. And then as they go through the program, they're going to do that assessment again. And so it's kind of a midpoint check-in where they're going to see where are they developing, where their opportunities still lie. And then at the end, they're going to do it again. Yeah, we should see, you know, big advancements in their skills and confidence.
So you've been in the throes of this for, I think you might have said 14 months. What are maybe tips for other credit unions who might be interested in doing something similar? And then also, since you've been at smaller credit unions too, maybe if there's a tip for someone who doesn't have the capability to spend 14 months on this?
Yeah. So, you know, probably back in 2011 or so, I met with a colleague at Twin Star Credit Union up in Washington, and they had created a CUSO out of their L&D department. And so they had created content that they were inviting other smaller credit unions to participate in. And so that kind of planted a seed initially. I was like, wow, that's a great idea. One, because it allowed for a little bit of income generation from the L&D function, which doesn't always happen, right? And two, it allowed for those smaller credit unions to get access to content and resources that they didn't have the ability to create themselves. So I would say, you know, look around the credit union network. One of the things I love about working in credit unions is how easy it is for us to share. Secondly, you know, I have benefited greatly. The Go West Credit Union Association over the last year has been running a talent advisory council. And each one of those quarterly meetings, we highlight some of the folks on the council and some of the leadership development efforts that they've taken. And so it's really allowed us to see how each organization handles leadership differently. And it's also allowed us to borrow ideas and share ideas from each other about leadership development. Folks who maybe are farther along in the path. We have some folks who have shorter programs that they do more frequently. And then we have other organizations where they are looking outside of the organization, like through Go West Association and the partnership with DDJ Myers to do leadership and talent development that way. And so for smaller credit unions, I would definitely encourage, you know, leveraging those opportunities. At Go West, there's even a scholarship fund, right? And so if a small credit union isn't able to afford to send one or two people to one of those leadership development opportunities, tap into the association, grab a scholarship so that you can make sure that your folks have that skill set.
Well, that's sort of what I was thinking. Are there any other parts of your program we glossed over, or just any kind of general leadership thoughts you want to get out there?
You know, part of the reason this all came up for us is a number of years ago, we had our CEO retire. And then shortly after that, we had our CFO retire. And we ended up hiring outside for both of those roles. And so one of the new things that our current CEO said is, you know, one of the ways that we can gauge success of this program is if we're able to promote from within the next time we have a key executive or vice president or director or, you know, any of those leadership positions, we want to grow those leaders from within.
Now, here's Vibrant Credit Union Senior Vice President of Culture and Leadership Development, John Sexton.
I want to just kind of introduce yourself and how you got involved in the space and how long you've been there.
Well, probably a little different in the credit union industry in that I spent the first decade of my career in higher education, a little over 10 years at the University of Iowa, and then a year at Grinnell College. Primarily directing orientation programs. We were focusing on group facilitation, individual leadership, kind of career development, et cetera. In addition to that work, I was facilitating curriculum as an adjunct instructor, really around the idea of, again, career development, leadership development, et cetera, in some certificate programs. And in 2015, Vibrant approached me and said, hey, would you ever come and do that work here? And my first reaction was, no, I have no desire to work in the financial space. It doesn't sound like me. I had a lot of assumptions. And then I came and met with some folks, and I was really intrigued by the foundation of the culture that I was interacting with and the great work that I saw people doing. And at that point, took a leap. That was, golly, almost 9 years ago. And so one of the ways that I was willing to come on was I knew the organization was committed to and invested in reinforcing culture and maximizing employee engagement. And my belief was that if we further invested in our leaders and helped grow them, that would in turn help our everyday employees have the best experience possible.
This might depend on the person, but how do you identify those high opportunity leaders or people that, I can't remember the word you just used, dynamic. How do you identify that?
You know, when we see somebody, we talk a lot about our core values. One of those is own every opportunity. And our core values are absolutely lived in the sense that we talk about them frequently. We celebrate when we see them stand out. And so anytime you see somebody really owning the opportunity of their role, meaning they're going above and beyond, there is no job that isn't in their job description. It's whatever needs to be done. They're generally embracing that with gusto. They're excited to take on tasks that are within their realm of responsibilities, but will do everything they can really to advance the initiatives associated with their department, to serve our members, or really to benefit the organization as a whole. The other one is bring contagious energy. And so we know that folks have an opportunity to choose their mindset to some extent when they come to work every day. We all have ups and downs, but those folks tend to be the ones that are, they provide contagious energy in a way that you want it to be contagious, right? I don't know if you've ever walked in a room where everybody's negative, but if I walk into that room, it doesn't take long before I think, okay, how do we get out of here? Yeah. And when you've got folks that provide an emotional boost or spark to a team, that tends to amplify performance across the board and just how people feel at work. And we know that when folks demonstrate those qualities, that's some good inclination or some good, not inclination, some good, there's a hint at talent there that would suggest that they will perform well as a people leader in a more formal capacity as well.
Sure. Yeah. I I can't exactly identify it myself, but I know what you mean. You can tell when people have that in them, I guess.
Yeah. We create a lot of volunteer opportunities within the organization. There's a lot of social opportunities, kind of watch and see how folks engage in that space, how they might take on volunteer roles on committees or other things. And again, there's just like this natural inclination or this work ethic that starts to come to the fore. Mm-hmm. While I say that we really look to identify that, folks can also apply for opportunities that we have within the organization as well to take leadership development courses. We have those in a application type capacity, but we also have that in an open forum where if somebody wants to attend a professional development opportunity to learn more about their strengths or their natural skill set, we kind of watch to see who attends those as well.
Okay. And most of your, I guess, when someone is identified or someone makes it known that they want to develop some, what's kind of that first step? Is it those courses or where do you go from that identification?
So one of the things that I would highlight is about 5 years ago, we built a leadership development curriculum. And there are two courses. Both are 6 months long and they require a commitment. You have to apply to be able to be admitted to these courses. And then we have a committee that selects those who are admitted. Now, the two courses are Exploring Leadership and Advancing Leadership. That Exploring Leadership is for those folks who have demonstrated an interest in leading in the future, want to build and grow in their career, and are demonstrating good performance in their existing role. Now, they'll fill out an application. We'll kind of vet that for what they're telling us, how this might benefit them, et cetera. And the course involves a pretty good amount of reading on a number of books, articles, podcasts, et cetera, that folks will engage with. And they do that in a cohort model, meaning they are very much collaborating with the other people in the course. We cap that at 6 to 8 participants per 6 month class. And within that, they have an opportunity to showcase what they're learning by doing a teach back to all of our managers, vice presidents, and executives. So it's not just me vetting, engaging, how effective is this person within the course? But I mean, they really get an opportunity to put together a project, a 1-hour presentation, and showcase that in front of all of our leaders. And frequently within that presentation, one of the questions that comes out is, who are some of the leaders within this group of folks who aspire to lead? And you start to zero on some folks who are really standing out in that regard.
Sure. Okay. Obviously, you don't view leadership qualities as universal. I don't know. Are there specific things that you do try to implement in everyone, or it's all just kind of go off your strengths and build those strengths?
I mean, particularly if it's someone who aspires to initially just manage a small team,
yeah,
we have to know that they have the individual accountability to perform well in that capacity. But one of the things that we talk a lot about in the course is there are a lot of organizations that fall prey to the temptation to promote outstanding individual performers who have no business supervising human beings.
Sure.
And what I mean by that is they don't care to help other people grow or develop or perform. They know how to do the job and it's just do what I do. Really great influencers will have that accountability, but they'll also know, gosh, when I get into a manager role of a team of a pretty good size, it's not about me doing the work anymore.
Sure.
And that's hard to let go of. It's really about me helping other people perform really well. One of my favorite takeaways, I don't know if this is relevant, but we read a book called The Making of a Manager by Julie Zhou. It's Zhou.
Okay.
Former designer at Facebook. And there's an example that she uses in there that it really tends to resonate with people. You can open a lemonade stand and you can sell the best damn lemonade on the block and people are going to want to come and buy that lemonade. And as you try to sell more lemonade, unless you teach other people that gift, you can only sell so much. You can only produce so much. But if you shift instead of doing it all yourself and you're teaching other people the secret recipe or how to do it or how to treat folks, all of a sudden you can really expand what you can do, but you can't be the one making it all the time. You have to be willing to teach and invest in others.
Yeah. I don't know if it's great leadership, but that just reminded me of the Tom Sawyer getting kids to pay to paint his fence for him.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. Look at this is an awesome task. You should do it too.
You pay me.
But I mean, it's a great example in the sense that you could view that as manipulation, or you could view that as here's somebody who's using influencing skills to get people excited about something that otherwise folks would look at and they're like, really, that's what you want me to do.
Yeah.
And that's what great managers do. They create meaning in work and help people feel like there's meaning associated with their job.
How about, and we're both sitting at home right now, how has that changed, I guess, the leadership identification process?
Yeah. So this is, I'll own that this is rare for me. Usually I'm in the office. Vibrant is very much an in-person organization. Okay. And so we spend a lot of time at our headquarters. It's been designed to attract and to draw people. And that probably reinforces our leadership model and the intangibles that we want to see as people who want to create an environment that their team wants to be a part of. Yep. And again, who want to invest in that growth, because part of maintaining an environment where people physically want to come to a building is having all of the conditions that attract people and make them want to stay. Because it's easy to jump on Indeed or LinkedIn and find a remote job or a hybrid job and to be able to do that anywhere. But we know that if, again, that people component's there, it helps maintain that in-person dynamic. And I'll refer to the data from Gallup, which I always tell folks that go into this course, is the number one variable in employee engagement is the manager. 70% of the variance in how people feel at work is directly attributable to their direct manager. And I always look at folks and say, just remember, if this is the direction you want to go, there is a tremendous amount of responsibility. It's not just about how you feel at work anymore. It's about how you make 2 to 10 other people feel every single day.
So if another credit union is looking to kind of upgrade their leadership development process, are there a couple first steps that you would suggest?
That's a great question. One of the things that I see is people fall prey to the temptation to do the new thing every year. So, hey, this year, let's do the DISC assessment. And the next year, we're going to try the strong inventory. And then the next year, we'll do leadership colors. And that's going to help us grow. And in higher education, we used to use the term making something sticky, meaning how do you not just start an initiative, but how do you make sure that it has momentum to continue forward? And I think within any good leadership development program, you're using certain tools, whether that's a talent inventory, a 360 process, dedicated coaching initiatives, roundtables, support conversations, et cetera. I think a good inventory or assessment can lay the foundation for creating a shared language in your organization. And so I say strengths a lot. When people walk around our building, they'll see everyone's top five. We give them little magnets and you can see what those strengths are. And we really reinforce that as those are not labels to frame what's wrong with people. And this is Gallup language. It's to frame what's right with them. And also for me to understand, gosh, and Brock does stuff that I definitely can't do. How do we partner together and do better work in that same vein? But the key is maintaining that language going forward. So for the past 9 years, we have continued to invest in the strengths-based culture and to expand upon it. Now, it's tough for me to walk through the building and not hear somebody reference one of their talent themes in a single day.
Wow. So you have them on like their cubicles or their desks? Okay.
Yep. And then teams also get grids so we can kind of see, gosh, what are some of the things that we share in common? And then who are our really unique people that think different than the rest of the group? What do they bring to this team, et cetera?
So I guess that's sort of what I had. I don't know. Is there anything else that any interesting trends or anything going on that you just want to mention?
I think sometimes another organizational temptation can sometimes, and this depends on the culture of the org, right? You've got anything that ranges from a Netflix culture that is super high accountability, maybe a little cutthroat in terms of performance. Mm-hmm. And then you've got family cultures where it takes an act of God to hold somebody accountable. And I don't mean that flippantly. It's just, I can't fire my brother. Okay. Yeah. And so I think within all of that, there's an aspect of not just leadership development, but leadership support, where understanding that if someone is not performing as a leader, sometimes it's okay to explore the conversation. Is this really what you want to do?
Sure.
Because sometimes people pursue leadership because they psychologically, they think that's the only way to grow in their career. If I don't have direct reports, then I haven't achieved some preconceived level of what I'm supposed to do. When in a number of cases, they can actually grow and develop much more exponentially in an individual performer capacity. Sure. And can manage projects as opposed to people. And sometimes it's just helping folks understand, gosh, your satisfaction at work will go up, and you might find that you think you need this, but it's making you miserable.
Yeah.
And a lot of organizations don't reach that once people get into leadership roles because they think there's risk. Sometimes we have leaders that self-identify, gosh, I thought this is what I want to do, and I want elevated responsibility, but I want it in terms of my ability to drive that.